Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the PGG Wrightson Annual Results Announcement. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you'd like to ask a question, you'll need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, and I'd now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker, Mark Dooney. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the PGG Wrightson Results Briefing for the 12 months ending June 30, 2015. I'm Mark Dooney, Chief Executive, and it's my pleasure to provide an overview to you all of our results for the year. On the call today with me are Julian Daly, our Company Secretary, Peter Scott, our CFO, Fiona James, Group Financial Controller, and Todd Robinson from our Strategy and Treasury team. I plan to talk for about 20 minutes, and then there will be time for questions at the end. I'll cover the financial results and spend some time talking about the key themes that we see in our markets and across our customers. And finally, I'd like to share with you the progress we've been making delivering our group strategy. Let me start, though, just by recapping the key points from our announcement to the market earlier today. And before I do that, please note that we use operating EBITDA as a key measure of performance within the business. This, as you will know, is a non-GAAP financial accounting measure, and I would refer you to our full accounts with details of how this relates to net profit measures. So the key financial headlines: operating EBITDA, excluding earnings of associates, was $69.5 million. That was up from $58.7 million in the previous financial year, a healthy 18% uplift. Net profit after tax was $32.8 million. That was down from $42.3 million last year. And yesterday, or today, we've announced a final dividend of 2 cents per share, which brings our full-year dividend to 4 cents per share, fully imputed. This is our third year in a row of increasing our operating EBITDA, and it demonstrates the continuation of our momentum, which began 2 to 3 years ago. This is a really strong result, given the challenging environment in some sectors of New Zealand agriculture over the year. And a significant amount of the credit for this result needs to go to our staff, who have worked tirelessly in the business and with our clients over the year. In June of this year, we provided updated guidance, and I'm pleased to report that we have exceeded this. The agricultural sectors of New Zealand and Uruguay experienced a tougher year than 2014, yet most of our individual business unit results have improved. And this has come through a combination of having great people, great products, and great services. And these results validate the investments that we've been putting into developing our business over the last several years. PGW is not immune to the challenges being experienced in some agri sectors, but the diversified nature of our business portfolio within agriculture offers a degree of protection from any individual cyclical sector volatility. Now, I think that was really clearly demonstrated by some statistics that were released from Statistics NZ, showing that in the last year, dairy exports declined by 24%, and in the same period, the value of fruit exports reached an all-time high, up almost 20% from the year earlier. And so although general sentiment in the agri-sector suggests that we have moved into a more difficult period after several buoyant years, it is important to appreciate that the downturn being experienced in some sectors, like dairy, is not universal, and there are many sectors of New Zealand agriculture with positive outlooks for the year ahead and beyond. I'll comment on these briefly as we now turn our focus to our key business units. If I start with retail, our retail business, which includes rural supplies, fruit fed, and our agri-trade initiative, continued to trade strongly, with combined revenues up $8 million, or 2%. Operating EBITDA increased by $1.8 million, to 27.3 million, which was a 7% increase. I've talked in the past about the hard work that we've put into developing our technical expertise, our customer service skills, our logistics systems, and how these are delivering positive results. And this work continues. What's really exciting is that we are now seeing the momentum that these improvements are generating. The positive culture that we have fostered has seen teams working together better than ever to support our customers. And as a result, ideas are growing and flourishing. The positive culture has also seen our teams become more flexible to change and adapt to meet the needs of our dynamic and constantly changing markets. If you forgive the cliche, 2015 was a year of two halves. Spring 14 started well, with farmer confidence still high from the previous season, and we continued to make market share gains in a growing market, particularly in our key value-add categories relating to agronomy inputs. Then as the summer started to turn dry and world dairy prices began to fall, we began to see a more conservative farming spending pattern emerge. Lamb prices fell quickly and haven't fully recovered. Sheep farming clients are now generally less confident than they were this time last year. The drought has also had an impact on quantities of capital stock, and this may impact on lambing percentages for the coming season. The second half of the financial year is always a slower period for retail than the first half, but it was encouraging to see that their results held up well during the tougher conditions over the second half of the year. Confidence remains firm or strong in the horticultural sector, and our fruit-fed business has had another great year, continuing to improve its contribution to the overall retail and group result. During the year, we moved to new retail premises in Kaikohe, Pukekohe, Ekitahuna, Murchison, Temuka and Te Anau, plus we completed major projects in Katikati, Stratford and Cromwell. I mentioned AgriTrade earlier. That's an exciting new initiative for PGW. AgriTrade is our importation and wholesaling business. It sources exclusive lines of product in the ag chem, animal health, and animal nutrition categories, and it wholesales these to a wide range of rural merchants and vet clinics. Highlights in the year were being appointed the exclusive sales agent for Roundup, and also the exclusive sales agent for the exciting VetMed range of animal health products. If I go to the seed and grain business now, our seed and grain business grew operating EBITDA, again excluding earnings of associates, to 40.3 million, which was up 19% from last year's 34 million. The main contributors to this increase in operating EBITDA were our New Zealand seeds and Australian seed businesses. The uplift in New Zealand seeds was predominantly in fodder beet and our proprietary herbs, legumes and grasses categories. By and large, the products that contributed to the increased results are spring products, and so the bulk of the contribution was achieved in the first half of the financial year. But what was also pleasing to note was that seed and grain also improved its second half performance compared to the 2014 year. In Australia, we're continuing to see the benefits of refocusing our activities and merging together, you know, the five or six acquisitions we made several years ago. We're delivering on the business plan to grow sales of our proprietary seeds at increased margins. And our turf business in Australia has also been a success, with increases in both turf seed and hydromulch revenues. Our international seed trading activities have performed well, whilst facing stiff competition from a strong European harvest and, until very recently, an extremely high New Zealand dollar. Grain volumes were down from last year's record result on the back of reduced demand for supplementary feed from the dairy sector. Uruguay, another key market of ours, suffered from some extreme weather events over the year. with an extremely wet spring, immediately followed by a crippling drought. This adversely affected both crop seed and ag chem sales. But despite those conditions, we sold more pasture seed in the 2015 financial year than we did in 2014 and at higher margins. We attribute a lot of this success to the recent investment that we made in seed coating Uruguay. Our irrigation business in Uruguay also suffered a little bit due to the weather, with many farmers choosing to defer their own investment in irrigation systems given the extremely wet first half of the year and falling commodity prices. Now, Brazil, whilst a small business, experience growth is really encouraging for the future. Overall, South American businesses did well to be only $1.8 million behind last year's operating EBITDA result. We are looking for further growth from this part of the group in the coming financial year. Our new logistics centre in Montevideo will be operational for the upcoming sales season, and our recently announced investment of the acquisition of 50% of AgriCentro will start contributing to our results following settlement of that transaction next month. To recap on that investment, we've purchased 50% of AgriCentro Uruguay. AgriCentro are a significant rural servicing company in Uruguay that we have had close links with since they were established in 2007. They've achieved impressive growth in this time to become our largest customer in South America, as well as being our largest seed producer and an important seed processor partner. Our investment secures a strong position in retail distribution while cementing a key strategic alliance. The contribution from this investment will appear in our statement of comprehensive income as equity earnings from associates. So from next year, you will hear us talk about operating EBITDA, including earnings from associates. Currently, the difference between this measure and our current operating EBITDA excluding earnings from associates is only about $200,000. Going forward, as AgriCentro's results begin to be included in our accounts and as their contribution grows, we expect that the difference between these two measures will grow. So to recap on seed and grain, it's fantastic to see their operating EBITDA back above $40 million. That's a great turnaround from the sub $30 million result of 2013. Returning to rural services, our livestock business increased operating EBITDA by 15% to $15.4 million, an increase of $2 million from the previous year. Our cattle category was the key contributor to the year-on-year increase, with high beef prices and strong demand from processors. This positive effect was moderated by lower activity in dairy herd sales, depressed market, and a price fall in lamb. Our live export business also lifted its contribution with two shipments completed over the year. And this largely explains the increase in revenue for livestock. Though with little to no demand for exported heifers at present, the outlook for financial year 2016 is less positive in the export space. Our livestock business also announced in June that it had agreed with Silverfern Farms to terminate the procurement agreement that was entered into in 2009. We had determined with Silverfern Farms that the agreement was no longer needed to regulate the livestock procure relationship. The agreement was not flexible enough to respond to seasonal and climatic changes that regularly occur in this business. We're going to continue, though, our supply relationship with Silverfern Farms, but without the formality of the procurement agreement. If I just look now at our other rural services businesses, overall, their operating EBITDA decreased by $2.3 million from a collective $14.1 million down to $11.8 million. The reduction in earnings was mainly in our real estate business. Despite increasing market share, earnings were adversely affected by a low number of farm listings coming to the market, particularly in the South Island, but offset by good growth in the Waikato and Bay of Plenty. On the positive side, we feel that the investment that we've made in our real estate teams over the last 12 months means that we are well placed to benefit from any uplift in market volumes when this occurs. Wool's result was similar to last year at an operating EBITDA level. Less bales were traded, but we were able to reduce our costs. Pleasingly, we've made good progress rebuilding our fine wool business, and we've secured really exciting contracts to supply merino wool to a number of global apparel companies. And water, our irrigation business, produced a similar operating EBITDA to the 2014 year. Sales activity was higher, particularly around Cromwell, but despite the higher revenues, water were unable to beat last year's record result that benefited from the repair work that came out of the severe windstorms in Canterbury. That covers the earnings side. If I now go to the balance sheet, our balance sheet remains strong. Net debt levels were generally higher over the 2015 year to close at $116 million, up by $27 million. The increase in borrowings have partially funded our investments in acquisitions, capital expenditure, and working capital. About a third of the increase is the effect of foreign exchange movements on our US dollar denominated debt in Uruguay. The falling New Zealand dollar naturally increases the value of Uruguayan debt in our reporting currency, the New Zealand dollar. I should point out, though, that we have more US dollar assets in Uruguay than debt, so the gain on the Uruguayan assets in New Zealand dollar terms was even larger. In March, we concluded the renegotiation of our New Zealand syndicated bank facilities to extend the term length of those facilities. And in recognition of the improvements that we've made to our balance sheet strength over the last few years, we were able to secure better pricing, which will reduce the cost of borrowing going forward. If I come back now to the net profit, which I mentioned at the start of this announcement, the increase in operating EBITDA contributed to a net profit after tax of $32.8 million. Now, this was lower than last year because last year's result benefited from a low effective tax rate and a number of non-operating gains that weren't repeatable, such as the gain on sale of our Four Seasons Feeds investment. We've also booked a provision in this year's results to cover potential costs and outcomes associated with the Commerce Commission's proceedings in relation to sale yard fees that were introduced in 2012 in connection with the implementation of the NAIT, or National Animal Identification Requirements. As we've reported in recent weeks, given that this matter is now before the courts, we are not in a position to disclose the amount of the provision, and we cannot comment further at this time, other than to reiterate that the amount of the provision is not material from a group perspective. Cash flows. Our operating cash flow was $29.2 million compared to $54.8 million in 2014. The decrease is mainly due to a 15% increase in working capital. Working capital fluctuates in our business depending on our view of the business's prospects, and this year we elected to increase the inventory of seed that we hold in Uruguay to allow us to better meet the early season sales demand, which we were able to do. And timing differences contributed to the increase in working capital, which is to be expected in a seasonal business such as ours. Also contributing to the change in cash flow are items such as our cash tax paid. We paid $11 million more cash in tax over the course of 2015 than in 2014. Our board resolved yesterday to declare a fully imputed final dividend of 2 cents per share. whilst the performance of the business has been strong, given the less certain outlook for New Zealand agriculture, the board has determined that it is prudent to take a cautious approach to distributions. Our board also acknowledges that PGW's investment program has gained momentum over the year in line with the strategy announced last year. Both the board and I are confident that this program will continue to lift our results and add value to our shareholders and ultimately lift cash distributions in further future years. Last year, I introduced our group strategy and I explained a little bit about our three key themes, which are improving our business, growing our business, and looking for game changers that will allow us to meet our changing customer needs and stay ahead of our competitors. The 2014 annual report will provide more colour on these themes, and I encourage shareholders and investors to revisit these pages. Today, I'd just like to spend a couple of minutes talking about some of the progress that we've made delivering our strategy. Our core strengths in sheep, beef, arable, horticulture, viticulture, livestock, wool trading, and agronomy remain at the heart of our strategy. We're committed to improving each of these categories, and this year's result provides evidence that we are achieving that. There's still a lot of room to improve, and recent initiatives like rolling out tablets to our field reps will provide the platform for future gains. Technology continues to create new solutions, and our opportunity is to utilise technology to improve our internal productivity and provide new solutions for our clients. On top of the core categories, we still see several areas where we have the ability to grow our business further. In dairy, we remain committed to growing our presence in dairy over the long term. The New Zealand dairy sector is in a tough space right now, but we believe that the longer term prospects remain strong. Apart from some of the effects that I've talked about today, our results have generally been insulated from the downturn in the dairy market and the declining confidence of that sector. We're confident that our technical offering and our great service has seen us grow our market share in what has been a falling market. South America, I've talked about some of the initiatives that we have underway in South America, such as the new logistics centre and the AgroCentro investment. These are really exciting developments in our South American business, and we plan to continue to invest sensibly in the opportunities that this region offers. In water or in irrigation, in June we announced that PGW Water had purchased the turf irrigation business of Advanced Irrigation Systems Limited. Whilst that was a modest acquisition in terms of size, the business is one of the market leaders in New Zealand turf and golf course irrigation. The acquisition is a good strategic fit and it expands our water offering into the design, consultancy and project management in turf. Throughout all of this though, we should never lose sight of the fact that the key to our success will be the way we work across our businesses to provide our customers with the best product, best technical advice, and the highest level of service and experience. And I firmly believe that our biggest opportunities remain in our core markets. So looking forward, our 2015 performance was very strong. Repeating this result next year will be a stretch target in the current market, and we will probably need to see a rebound in market conditions and farmer confidence to match it. On the one hand, we still have many opportunities in our core business to realise, but on the other, we are not immune to the headwinds facing some of our sectors at the present time. It's too early to tell how these opposing forces are going to play out in terms of our financial results. This is a cyclical industry, but I'm confident that we are on the right path. It's our intention to provide more information on our progress on that path, including a forecast at the time of the annual shareholder meeting, which is currently scheduled for late October. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the formal part of our presentation. At this stage, I'm on the line for any questions. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you'd like to cancel that request, please press the pound or hash key. Our first question comes from the line of James Buscard from Forsyth Barr. Please ask your question.
Thanks, moderator. And hi, Mark and team. Firstly, congratulations on a very good result, and also, Mark, on a very insightful presentation. That was excellent. Thank you. Just a couple of key questions. We've obviously seen a number of small acquisitions over the last half. Perhaps if you could highlight to us what other business areas you see as potentially subscale, and where maybe we can expect some further acquisitive growth, maybe in the real estate or the wool business, or maybe you can sort of expand on that would be great.
So James, what I won't do is make comments on specific acquisitions that we might be looking at, obviously. But at any point in time, we are likely to have a number of discussions underway with potential partners, be it collaboration or be it acquisition. What we look for when we are considering growth by way of acquisition, several things. We look for companies that are adjacent to our core markets or are part of our core markets, so that we are able to get further into things that we know already. We absolutely believe that the key to any acquisition is the ability of the business to execute on it, and the further any acquisition gets from things that you're doing now, the harder it gets to execute on those well. So we're looking for things that will give us deeper access to customers, more product that might fit through our distribution channels, technology that we can take into markets that we are in already. And really we don't have any parts of our business where we wouldn't be open to, sensible, bolt-on acquisitions. But at the same time, we don't have any that we are specifically prioritising as targets. But at any time, we've got two or three on the burner at different stages. And if and when we get to the point where we've transacted, then of course we'll update the market straight away.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, thanks. Secondly, obviously we expect, agri activity to tighten up a bit over the next 12 months on the back of the dairy headwinds. How do you expect to combat this at a cost level? We've obviously seen Fonterra highlight a number of job cuts, and I'm not saying your corporate overheads are on par with them to any extent, but how do you adjust for potentially lower employee utilisation?
So first comment is that dairy is an important sector for us, but we are by no means a dairy centric business. And we don't have any businesses that are solely dairy focused. So we don't expect to have a decline that will force us into making radical changes to our cost base. We also have a philosophy that don't get fat in the good times, so that you've then got to get skinny in the poor times. We try to make sure that we keep our costs under control and our structures under control at all times, and that enables us to avoid major cost takeout programs, which we know from experience, I think everybody knows from experience, really damage culture and take the eye of staff off the main game, which is servicing clients. So, you know, we'll be cautious around our costs, as we always are. We'll be cautious around our capital, as we always are. But at this point in time, we're not planning, you know, any programs like those that we're seeing come out of Fonterra at the moment.
Good to hear. Okay, I'll leave it there, Mark. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from the line of Kario Yeo from First New Zealand Capital. Please ask your question.
Thank you, Mark. I'd like to add my congratulations to your team. This is a very, very good result indeed. A couple of questions for you. Any colour that you could provide to us on debtors' age, firstly, would be helpful, especially in recent times. And secondly, in terms of the inventory increases that you talked about on your balance sheet, just wanting to clarify that they're entirely strategic and seasonal, and there's nothing that you think would be at risk of having to be written down or provided for going into 2016.
Yeah, so if I take debtors first, so our debtor aging at balance date last year compared to balance date a year prior was about the same, okay? And we trended through last year between sort of 6 and 9% overdue at the end of any month. And I think we were broadly around the 8 to 8.5 at year end. So, you know, across our entire debtors ledger, at balance date, it was similar to the year prior. Now, we'd have to be, you know, realistic looking at the next 6 to 12 months and expect to see some pressure on payment of dairy debt. You know, it's well publicised that dairy farmers, you know, milk income will be lower than their cost of production over the next 6 months, maybe longer, and that's going to put some payment pressure into the sector, and we won't be immune to that. That said, the key is to run good credit processes, and I'm confident that we do that. We have a strong set of regional teams who are very close to their customers, and we've got good experience in dealing with slow payment situations. And so we'll manage our way through that, but I do think that there will be some pressure on that sector over the next 6 to 9 months. There is a little bit more activity in the market around deferred payment terms. Fonterra's subsidiary, RD1, very active in that space at the moment, offering up to 6 month deferrals on essentially all purchases. We're not going to do that. Our balance sheet doesn't provide it, but in some specific instances, we will possibly, be flexible around certain products, certain customers, but we're not going to get into a battle based on long deferrals of credit. So that's, I think that covers the debtor side of it. Inventory, the increases in inventory, I talked about the South American seed inventory. We consciously made a decision to increase our grass inventory levels in South America to enable us to meet market demand. And I'm comfortable with that decision, and I'm comfortable that the increased inventories were matched by higher sales. The FX rate drop has quite a market effect on the translation value of South American inventory at balance date. So you need to take that into account. The other part of the business where we increased inventory was water, and that reflects growth over the year. And at the end of the year, as the New Zealand dollar started to fall, you know, the average inventory value starts to track up in water because a lot of it tends to be imported. Inventory levels across retail and other parts of the business broadly in line with last year.
That's great. Mark, could you give us sort of your best estimate of your receivable books? What portion is might be exposed to dairy or dairy-related activities?
Yeah, I don't have a really clear figure there, KU. We estimate that our direct dairy business is still in that 25%. So you could probably assume that the debtors were broadly the same percentage.
Okay.
But we don't. There's so many mixed farming businesses out there now, and we hold we hold sales and debtors by customer. And so customers that have a dairy business, it's not that easy to just isolate it absolutely.
Understand. My final question is in relation to this derivative not in qualifying hedge relationships that's now included as part of your net interest costs. This is in relation to note 7. This year was the negative item that added to the total net interest and finance costs. Just trying to understand the nature of that derivative that's led to a book entry.
KU, I'll pass this question to Todd Robinson to answer.
Thank you. Hi, KU.
Hey, Todd.
So how these arise is the seed and grain business is a great example where they will hedge an export of seed with a foreign exchange derivative, so that is booked, but the revenue item in the debtor isn't recognised until we actually ship the seed. So we always sort of had this mismatch according to the accounting system. So we're doing the right thing in terms of hedging the exposure, but the accounting system doesn't catch up until it's actually on the boat. So with the big fall in the kiwi in the last couple of months, that means that the value of those export contracts have increased and the hedge has decreased. So that's what you're seeing there.
Right, so what it's basically doing is transferring the revenue differential to do with the FX rate as at year-end against your contract from FY16 into FY15. Am I understanding that right?
Yes. Yep.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
So, just a comment. It's Peter Scott here. On your question about note 6 as well in terms of actual interest costs. As Mark mentioned earlier on, net interest-bearing debt is actually $27 million higher in 2015 than it was in 2014. And the average interest rate between the 2 years is actually 79 base points higher, so that's actually causing our interest costs to be a little more than the previous year as well. So just have to bear that in mind for note 6 too.
Understand. Thank you.
Once again, if anyone would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. There appears to be no further questions, so I might hand back to your speaker for any closing remarks.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining the call. Thank you for your continued interest in PGW and for your continued support as shareholders, analyst, media. We really appreciate it. So we'll let you go now and we'll talk to you later. Thanks again. Bye.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you so much for your attendance. You may all disconnect.